Our lesson from Luke 14 is where Jesus challenges the primacy of family loyalty. Creating the new household of God will strain other relationships. A better understanding of hate may be a willingness to detach from or subordinate one's loyalty to family, safety, and life itself for the sake of Christ. Hear now the words from Luke's Gospel. Now, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who will see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. There is hardly a more startling text in all of the New Testament than the one I just read. Jesus' teaching is harsh and demanding. We are called to give up everything, family, possessions, even life itself. The cost is enormous, not to be incurred without rigorous examination of our priorities and careful preparation for the likely outcome, taking up our cross. As foreign as this teaching sounds in a culture predisposed to self-advancement, I was surprised to find it echoed by Fenton Johnson, who writes that Jesus' teaching is common to every monastic tradition, Christian and non-Christian. He writes, "Monasticism is the institutionalized response to the need to dwell in sacred time. What's remarkable is that although separated by vast gaps in geography, history, and culture, both Western and Eastern monastics live lives committed to poverty, celibacy, and obedience, addressing the three great obstacles to faith and the cornerstones of secular culture: family, money, and power. These temptations to find value and meaning through family possessions and self-advancement are so strong that not even the disciples achieved it, or at least not while in the presence of the earthly Jesus. Jesus went to the cross alone. No disciple shared his fate on Good Friday. We may find some small comfort in this as we begin now to unpack this teaching. The saying in verse 26 about hating family, even life itself, stymies us. It contradicts the greatest commandment, that we are to love one another. It also brings to mind Jesus' teaching that we cannot say that we love God while hating our brother. Modern listeners will hear hate as an emotional response full of animosity and loathing. Luke's listeners, on the other hand, would have heard an Aramaic rhetorical device that meant to turn away from or to detach oneself. It's not something we can actually translate very well from the Aramaic. It calls for a clear choice between one thing and another. The frame here is Jesus' teaching You cannot serve two masters. You will end up loving one and hating or turning from the other. We cannot have mixed loyalties and finish what our discipleship has begun. This text burns hot with choices. We must make them if we are to follow Jesus. And then Jesus turns to a cold calculation of the cost of our discipleship. Who builds a tower without counting the cost? Who goes to war without a clear-headed assessment for the chances of victory? Don't start what you can't finish, not because of heavenly consequences, but because of earthly shame. You will be laughed at if you can't finish. Then Jesus launches into two illustrations, one from the building trades and the other from the armed forces, to determine our ability to persist. And so if anybody asks you what the sermon's about today, this is it. It's about persistence. In the first, the builder sits down to project what the cost of construction will be. And in the second, the king gets with his military advisors to determine whether a small army of 10,000 will defeat an army of 20,000. Many ancient battles were lost due to insufficient strength. And in Jewish memory, there is the humiliation of Alexander, who tried to defeat Demetrius. Demetrius had 300 horsemen and 40,000 footmen. The Jewish general Alexander had 6,200 mercenaries and 20,000 fellow Jews. As expected, 43,000 defeated 26,000. Demetrius wiped them out and sent Alexander fleeing to the mountains. In light of this painful memory, Jesus advises us to count the cost. Many lives will depend on whether this effort has staying power and can defeat obstacles. Sit down, calculate what your baptism will cost. Many who entrust themselves to the church depend on whether our efforts have staying power. Once you have a realistic assessment of the cost, meaning all your resources, money, people, strategy, and time, then you must decide, are you ready to commit? And once the assessment and the commitment have been made, is there resilience, persistence, tenacity to see it through past the waning of initial enthusiasm? In most undertakings, there are three phases. High enthusiasm with the first blush of the initiative, and then there's the last phase, a renewed burst of energy when the goal comes into sight. But then there is the great middle phase, which is barely remembered, by the way, because we don't like to recall it. This is the phase of sustained effort. This is the most crucial period because it is when we are in danger of quitting. I have a great illustration that a church member gave me. I want to share it with you. He's a sailor, and he knows about something called catching. I have never heard about this before. But apparently when you're out in your sailboat and there is no wind, and you know where you're to go, you use your anchor to throw it out ahead of you, and then the whole crew has to pull towards this anchor. And then you throw it out again, and the whole crew pulls towards the anchor, and you catch until finally the boat is in a place where it gets wind and can go forward. I love that as an illustration of the middle phase, this great period of sustained effort. Ann Landers once wrote, "Maturity is the ability to stick with a project or situation until it has been completed. It is the capacity to face unpleasantness, frustration, discomfort, and defeat without complaint or collapse. This is the kind of mature discipleship that Jesus sets before us. Let's go deeper. Part of the price to be paid is the connection We have to family, possessions, and power. We cannot serve two masters. We will love one and turn away from the other. We must choose. To succeed, we must and we will be changed, detached, and remade for a new way of loving. I'll let you in on a secret. The end of this path is not isolation or want, but a greatly expanded notion of family and connection, resulting in the loosening of the grip of anxiety and fear concerning what we will eat or what we will wear or how we will provide for our families. As Jesus says, the Holy One knows you need these things. You will not go without them. Stanley Hauerwas, who taught Christian ethics over here at Duke Divinity School, wrote a provocative article about this passage entitled, "Hating Mothers as the Way to Peace." In this essay, Hauerwas points out that we Christians do not consider ourselves a violent people. Indeed, most of us believe that we are peace-loving people who are only provoked to violence to protect those whom we love. In fact, he writes, it is our loves and our loyalties that are the source of our violence. By contrast, he writes, Jesus creates a way of life where competing loves are not a source of violence and harm to other people. In Jesus' way, we can love our children without threatening the children of other people. We can't have it both ways. We can't live with one foot in the world of striving to gain advantage for our children, using violence if necessary, and the other foot in the world of being peacemakers. We cannot serve two masters. We will love one and we will turn away from the other. We must choose, and to succeed, we must be changed, detached, remade for a new way of loving, so that we may love knowing our lives and our children's lives are not secured by the threat of violence, but are secured in the love of God. This way, everyone's children, our children, and the children of other people will be kept safe from harm. Jesus summarizes his message saying that to follow him means leaving everything that belongs to us, people, belongings, even life itself. That way there will be no competing allegiances to defeat us as we seek the love that does no harm. The potter's wheel is turning out a new community, a new way of sharing resources, a radicalized way of loving your neighbor. A community where you do not seek advantage for your children or your family, but instead where we advocate for every family and for every child. I promise to come back around with the assurance that not even the disciples were able to walk this road with Jesus. Everyone failed. When the text uses the word unable, as in unable to finish, the meaning is literally cannot. It does not mean don't care to. What if the builder lacks the resources, simply cannot finish? What if the king is not strong enough, literally cannot overcome the overwhelming force? We are of ourselves unable to do this. And if we calculate the cost of 10,000 going out against 20,000, we will turn back. Now, we come to the great turn in Luke's teaching. Tell me, who was it that went out with many fewer than 10,000 against many more than 20,000? Anybody want to hazard a guess? The church. The church of Jesus Christ. The church that Luke is preaching to. Had they lived by calculation, there would be no church today. They were soundly outnumbered, up against overwhelming forces. Yet over time, the Roman Empire would be swept away by the waters of Christian baptism. What was required wasn't money or might, but faithful tenacity. In this second phase, this great phase of sustained effort, it is entirely about trusting God for the long haul, in season and out. Broken vessels, everyone, they were remade by the potter to build a kingdom they could not see and had to trust us to finish. And so we stand today in the long line of saints, not present at the first light of resurrection and nowhere close to the end, but we are in the great middle phase and we are on the way. Trusting the potter, fearing the wheel, placing our hope in the risen Jesus who walks by our side even now. There is an old saying in the church, saints are sinners who keep on trying. We can be that kind of saint, imperfect and prone to be defeated by obstacles and frustration, but have faith. The resurrected one beckons us to get up and try again and again and again in the sure and certain hope that we are being changed and that Jesus' way will prevail and will prevail through us.